Okay, so table of bread. Table of bread. Let's read this from Exodus 25. It's a pretty short section. So, Eric, remind me, there's three objects in the holy place. What are they?
Altar of incense, golden lampstand, and the table.
Very good. Okay, so this is the final thing in the holy place before we make our way into the Holy of Holies. Daniel, read this for me, please. Exodus 25, 23 through 30.
You shall make a table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long and 1 cubit wide, and 1.5 cubit high. You shall overlay it with pure gold and make gold border around it. You shall make for it a rim of a hand breadth around it, and you shall make a gold border for the rim around it. You shall make 4 gold rings for it, and put rings on the 4 corners which are on its 4 feet. The rings shall be close to the rim as holders for the poles to carry the table. You shall make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold, so that with them the table may be carried. You shall make its dishes and its pans and its jars and its bowls, with which were to pour drink offerings. You shall make them of pure gold. You shall set the bread of the presence on the table before me at all times.
Okay. Well, we are going to look at a couple other passages about this one, y'all, because Exodus doesn't tell us everything we need to know about the table of bread. Observations from this text, details, foreshadows, before we do turn to Leviticus. I have a couple, but... All right, Hannah. What was it made out of?
Acacia wood.
Overlaid with?
Gold.
There you go. There you go. Acacia wood overlaid with gold. Jane Lindsay Wikipedia'd acacia wood, and it is still used in Africa for construction. Apparently a very sturdy wood. There you go. And actually, factoid of the day. I was putting the Romans 9 through 11 material together this afternoon. And Angie, you'll appreciate this. I found a public domain picture of an acacia tree being grafted. It was like double biblical symbolism. So I had to put that in there. Looking at a couple other details of this, Daniel, do some math for me. In feet, how long, wide, and tall was it?
3 feet by 1.5 feet, about 2.25 feet.
Okay. So, very tall? No, no, not very tall at all. And if you take all those, multiply them together, divide by 7, you get... Y'all look back to page 53. Obviously the light is a bit out of time, but gives you just an idea of what this was. And if you'll look, all the utensils here were made out of what?
Gold.
Every last one of them made out of gold. Okay? So this is a reminder just of the preciousness of this. Okay? There's a detail that struck me in the text. I guess it was after the lesson Sunday morning. Verse 30. What is the bread called?
Show bread.
The show bread. Okay, now, what translation do you use, Darlene?
New King James.
New King James, okay. So, either probably S-H-E-W bread, the show bread.
S-H-O-W.
S-H-O-W, okay. Some translations also do S-H-E-W bread, the show bread, okay. Why is this called the show bread?
It says bread of presence.
Or ESV calls bread of presence. Why? Why is this bread called the bread of presence?
It says right here, literally, face.
Okay.
What did he say?
Literally, face. This literally reads, you shall set the bread of the face on the table before me regularly. Why is this called the bread of face?
Because it was put before God's face every day.
That's it. This was put before God's face, God's presence every day. So I think what's interesting about this is, if you read through Leviticus, there was just the general grain offering. The grain offering was given both in regular remembrance with most of the major festivals, It was also just a general peace offering, free will offering up to God. This bread, this grain is different in that it's close to God's presence. Okay? Now, we'll think through that in a second. Why is bread here associated with God's presence?
Going back to what you said before.
Go ahead, Kirby.
Yeah. Face on the table before me, but me is God, yes?
Yes.
So is that face, is that maybe more of Christ than that's the body?
I think this is exactly how Jesus reads this. Yes. I think Jesus reads himself back into this, and I'll show you why in a minute. Yeah, without question. Well, let's look over to Leviticus. Leviticus gives a few more details about this. Look over to Leviticus 24. Leviticus 24. Darlene, if you'll read for me, Leviticus 24, verse 5 down through verse 9.
And you shall take...
Oh, you're good.
And you shall take fine flour and bake 12 cakes with it. 2 tenths of an ephah shall be in each cake. You shall set them in 2 rows, 6 in a row, and on the pure gold table before the Lord. And you shall put pure frankincense on each row, that it may be on the bread for a memorial of an offering made by fire to the Lord. Every Sabbath he shall set it in order before the Lord continually, being taken from the children of Israel by an everlasting covenant. And it shall be for Aaron and his sons, and they shall eat it in the holy place, for it is most holy to him, from an offering of the Lord made by fire in a perpetual statute.
Very good, thanks. So, a couple other details about this. What was this literally cooked from?
Fine flour.
Fine flour. And? What other ingredient?
The ephah.
Okay, what is an ephah, y'all?
Is that a measurement?
It's a measurement. If you look at your footnotes, it should say at the bottom of your page, an ephah was about 22 liters. Okay?
Bake 12 cakes with it.
Yes. Yeah. So if you look at the text, 2 tenths of an ephah, so just about two liters, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a great, great deal here. But then it also has frankincense mixed with it. Now, frankincense was used in what other part of the holy place? On the...
Altar of incense.
Yeah. So frankincense was also used on the altar of incense, but here it is put on the bread. And notice this key word in verse 7, as a memorial portion. That is a phrase that is used a few times in the book of Leviticus to refer to generally Exodus type events. There's various times that Israel had memorial portions that they would give over to God as memorials for God's delivering them from the Exodus. And then if you look at verse 8 and 9, who were the only people that could eat this? Only the Aaron and his sons, only the priests. Okay? Now, what would they do on the Sabbath day with this?
Set it in order before the Lord.
Set it in order before the Lord. So you'll see what that consists of is they would put this in 2 different piles of 6. Now, obviously, the symbolism of 12. Why 12, Heath?
Tribes of Israel.
12 tribes. Now, here's the question. Why 2 piles of 6?
It's 12.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go. Ezekiel taught you so much, Cindy. I have no earthly idea. No other idea. There's all types of guesses, you know, is this foreshadowing the future split between Israel and Judah? Is this showing relationship between God and man? The text never tells us. I have no idea. I'm sure the priests would have understood some significance that I'm just not getting. And to my knowledge, the Bible never tells us why. Two piles of 6. There's guesses, but I can't say with certainty. I noticed that not, especially on the Sabbath, this was to be a perpetual do. Always. Okay? This is not going to stop. This is something that's always going to be done. Okay? Okay. So let's talk about two things. I want to talk about foreshadowing in this, and then I want to talk about David in this. So obviously the foreshadowing with this. Go to John 6. Go to John 6. Eric, read for me, John 6, 34 through 40.
They said to him, "Sir, give us this bread always." Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. But I said to you that you have seen me, and yet you do not believe. All that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me I will never cast out. For I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I should lose nothing of all that he has given me, but raise it up on the last day. For this is the will of my Father, that everyone who looks on the Son and believes in him shall be eternal life. And I will raise him up on the last day."
Very good. Why does Jesus refer to himself as the bread of life? Now, note the context. This is the feeding of the 5,000. Why does Jesus refer to himself as the bread of life?
He's the one who supplies our needs. He's going to fill us.
Amen. Yeah, it's this idea of being filled, I think, is the idea here, that much as Israel ate the manna and was filled, Jesus did the will of God and was filled. And we likewise, when we feast on Jesus, are filled. He's the bread of life. And so that, I think, gives a great significance, of course, to, you know, why there's a weekly Lord's Supper, is if you take the Lord's Supper is really patterned after which feast from Israel? Say what? I heard it. Passover. How often was Passover celebrated?
Once a year.
Why don't we celebrate our Passover once a year?
Good question.
We continually need.
Huh?
We continually need.
I think that's it. I think that, you know, it's what we see in Jesus, because later in this text he's going to talk about eating his flesh, drinking his blood. Some will say that's not a connection to the Lord's Supper. I don't see how there's not some level of connection to that. Some will just say it's just hyperbole to make them grotesque, but I just don't buy that. But I think what he's reminding them is this is a perpetual reminder of your reliance on God, much as the priest entered weekly into the holy place to eat of the manna, or to eat of the bread. So I think that's
that bread was always there.
Always.
Always there.
Always.
A constant need.
Yes, exactly. Because really when you think through it, I mean, if the Lord's Supper is patterned after Passover, you would expect Christians to take it once a year. But that's not what you see. Really, Acts 2 and Acts 20 are the only places where you see clarity about when it was taken. But I do believe it was taken weekly by the early saints. And I think for that reason, they understood that there's now a greater bread of life that Jesus provides. Do you have additional thoughts about that? Go ahead, Daniel. Murky the waters. I can tell it's in your smile.
Yeah, I have questions myself. For us, I think, this is my opinion, but I think taking it weekly, I think it kind of diminishes me sometimes if it comes to that.
Yeah. That was Israel's problem, right? I mean, the Sabbath was to be a perpetual reminder of God's rest he gave them, but they turned it into a commonplace. I mean, they had all of these arbitrary rules around it and lost the real meaning of Sabbath. Easy for us to fall into.
Don't you think we do? I do that with any worship.
Absolutely.
I'm guilty of that four times.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Any repetition.
Oh, yeah. Ben?
I just thought of something else that's cool, foreshadowing a little bit tangential from this, but interesting that gold, frankincense, and myrrh are all present within the temple.
Mm-hmm.
The myrrh for consecration, the frankincense for cleansing, and memorial, and the gold for purity.
Absolutely.
All those arriving at the birth of Jesus.
Yes, absolutely. Brought to him by Gentiles, no less. Yeah. And I think that's a large, no matter how many magi that came to Jesus, when you look at the gifts that were brought, this is priestly royal gifts that are brought to him from Gentiles.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, absolutely. He is the high priest, the true king born, who is receiving these things.
I assume that myrrh or frankincense were utilized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. If you read through Exodus 26 in more detail, there is a great deal of minutia about how even the incense and the frankincense was to be made. So, very, very important to God. Exactly how those were going to be made.
And put it on the bread, too.
Yes. Other thoughts?
Because of what the bread represents.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Were you going to say anything?
Same thing.
Yeah, let me do Mark and Jeff.
Go ahead, Mark. I was going to say the same thing.
Okay.
There is a church, not Church of Christ, but there is a church that advocates taking of the Lord's Supper daily. Mm-hmm. So, I guess they see it as a communion with Christ, and they say, as often as you take this, you do so in remembrance of me. Well, that means,
right.
You know, as much as you want, I guess, or need, or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just saying this, there are people.
It is, and I will tell you, there's, I think, probably a bit more uncertainty here than we'd like to admit. What day of the week did Jesus institute the Lord's Supper? A Thursday. I've asked this to many preachers, and I've never gotten an answer. Why don't we take it on Thursday? I can say with certainty that Jesus took it on Thursday. Acts 20, verse 7, and the disciples gathered together to break bread. I lean towards saying that's the Lord's Supper, but I cannot say with certainty that that was the true Lord's Supper. Because of the wording also used in Acts 2, verses 42 through 44, I lean towards saying it was the Lord's Supper. But I have read many good arguments for saying that's not the Lord's Supper. And if that's the case, the only clear example of the Lord's Supper being taken would be Acts 2, which again is called the breaking of bread. Paul in 1 Corinthians 11 never specifies in that scenario how often it was being taken. I mean, he talks about their division there. But I think a lot of these things, Mark, we really need to rethink through, because especially in light of Passover, why don't we take it on Thursday? Why don't we take it once a year? Questions I think if the Lord's Supper is meaningful to us, we need to be able to give a good answer for. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, the thought of us taking it weekly, here this was done by the priests weekly.
Yes.
We're now a priestly people.
Absolutely.
So we have the right.
Yes. Yeah, and I didn't say not only the right, I would say also the responsibility. And that is why I'm still very much in favor of us taking a weekly Resurrection Day Lord's Supper. It is a priestly function of new creation that reminds us of the resurrection and the true life that Jesus has given. And I think even more so now, it shows us just the true Passover that's come in Jesus and delivering us from sin. So great point. It is a priestly act of worship now that's not just for common people, but it's for priests. Yeah. Other thoughts about that, y'all? Go ahead, Darlene.
No.
Nope. You sure?
Why weren't they allowed to carry it by hand? Why did it have to be on poles?
Yeah. Good question. When y'all look back to the Exodus 25 passage, you'll note that, like the ark, it was to be carried using poles. Look over to Numbers 4. This is not a passage that we have talked in great detail about, but Numbers 4 gives great detail about how all of this was to be carried. Oh, my. Look over to Numbers 4. So the first part of this talks about the ark and how it was to be carried. But Numbers 4, I'm going to start in verse 4. This is the service of the sons of Kohath in the tent of meeting, the most holy things. When the camp is set out, Aaron and his sons shall go in and take down the veil of the screen and cover the ark of the testimony with it. Then they shall put on the covering a goat skin and spread on top of the cloth all of blue and shall put it on poles. And over the table of the bread of presence, they shall spread a cloth of blue and put it on the plates. The dishes, the incense, the bowls, the flagons for the drink offering, and the regular showbread also shall be on it. Then they shall spread them over a cloth of scarlet and cover the same with a covering of goatskin and shall put them on poles. And they shall take a cloth of blue, its lamps, its tongs, its trays and the vessels of oil with which it's supplied. And they shall put with it all the utensils and a covering of goatskin and put it on the covering frame. We'll read a couple more verses. And over the golden altar they shall spread a cloth of blue and cover it with the covering of goatskin and shall put it on poles. And they shall put the vessels of service that are used in the sanctuary and put them in a cloth of blue and cover them with the covering of skin. You read through the rest of the chapter, that's pretty much what the whole chapter reads like. It seems to me that it has to do with the holiness of it. Toward the middle of the chapter, it says in verse 18, "Let not the tribe of the clans of the Kohathites be destroyed from among the Levites, but do with them thus, that they may live and not die when they come to the most holy things. Aaron and his son shall go in and appoint them, but each to task and his burden. And they shall not go in to look on the holy things even for a moment, lest they die." So it seems that the Kohathites, at least this is my reading of it, the Kohathites would not have been the ones to have gone in service of the bread of presence, but they would have been the ones to move it. So it's allowing the Kohathites to be able to move it without actually touching it. Desecrating. Thank you. Either desecrating, that is going to hurt somebody's ears. Either desecrating either themselves or the object. That's my understanding.
Additional thoughts? Which is awesome. Really, when you read through this, the care that God wanted, taking care of what was holy to him.
Yes.
So us ourselves, once we're sanctified, when we're holy, the care he will take.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, 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 yes. Tiffany, go ahead. I want you to turn to 2 Timothy real quick. Look over to 2 Timothy. Did you have additional follow-up thought?
No, it was just because I knew they had been directly commanded not to touch the ark, but there were no commandments I could find not to touch these objects. So I just wondered why the poles, if they...
It seems to me it's because it's a specific set of Levites that weren't given the right to do it, but were given the responsibility to carry it. Look over to 2 Timothy 2. This follows directly with Eric's invitation last week. 2 Timothy 2, verse 20. "Now in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also wood and clay, some for honorable use, some for dishonorable. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from what is dishonorable, he will be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work." Same idea here. That in the house there are honorable and dishonorable vessels, but the honorable vessels have to be cleansed and sanctified so that they can be given over to good use. Same idea, we're the vessels. Yeah. Eric, thoughts about that?
I'm looking forward to talking about this.
Yes, good connection. Yeah, this is a very helpful verse in understanding that whole confusing part of Romans 9:22. All right. Well, let's get things a bit murkier, shall we? Let's go to Matthew 12. I want to talk to y'all about this passage. This is a confusing passage.
Can you just go to a small group?
Yep.
Eric said, looking forward to Saturday. Can I just tell the ones that are here that probably almost everybody will be there? Saturday, when you go to Burnham, you want to, I'll say this from the announcements in a little bit, but I'll probably bother you.
Yeah.
So you'll go to the first parking lot. When you're going down Alden Drive, when you see the first parking lot, pull in there. There's a bunch of parking lots. Pull in the first one. And when you look at the building, you're going to see two doors go to the one on the right. I might have some balloons or something to know to go in that door. You go in that right door and just walk straight, and the library will be on the left. Just straight in the building, and you'll see the library on the left.
Kirby, I will do this. I can go on Google Maps and get a picture of Burnham's parking lot. I'll text that to you if you can show me where it is.
Okay.
Then I can email that out to everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be an archery meet there in the gym. It's going to be a lot of cars, so you got things going.
Yep. So pick Jessica, remind me to do this tomorrow night. I've got to up tomorrow afternoon, please. Pick a parking lot and email. Also do some. Got it. Yeah, I'll try to do that tomorrow afternoon for you. Thank you. Alright, look at Matthew 12. Lauren, will you read this for me? Matthew 12, 1 through 8.
Matthew 12.
First 8 verses.
All the time time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain to eat. When the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." He said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God and ate the bread of presence, which it was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priests? Or have you not read in the law how on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. And if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not condemn me of this.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I want us to remind ourselves of the story here. Why did David eat the bread of the presence? He was on the run from Saul. He and his men were starving. So in 1 Samuel 21, they eat of the bread of the presence. Okay? Now, we now know who were the only ones that were allowed to eat the bread of the face. Only the priest. So, is Jesus approving of David's eating of the bread of the face?
He's not condemning it.
He's not condemning it.
Right.
Difficult thoughts. Yes,
and he's making the connection between himself and David in, but, you know, I'm better now.
Right.
David could do that. I surely can do that.
Yeah, let me tell y'all, this is a difficult passage. This is a very difficult passage, okay? So let's try to understand what's going on here. Heath, what are your thoughts?
Nothing yet.
Nothing yet? Eric? Both of you had smirks.
No, I just want to see where you're going. No?
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Well, anyone this was approving that he was the Messiah. This was approving of it, but I don't
know. You mentioned Jesus.
Let me do Tiffany then, Eric. Go ahead, Tiffany.
You've mentioned before the king as priest concept.
Yeah. I mean, you remember likewise, David wears an ephod before the Lord, which was strictly for the priest. Eric?
I think in some way Jesus and David are serving that priestly role, so it's okay for them to do what they're doing because they are priests in God's eyes. They're carrying out the vocation of the priesthood.
Right. Right.
And the very thing that they're doing, he's just showing them that it's a different priesthood than maybe they're thinking in terms of what they're thinking.
Okay. Yeah. So David and the Lord are both fulfilling priestly functions, even though they were not of the tribe of Levi.
Right.
Let me ask you one other question. Look at verse 7. This, I think, is another key to this. Where does this quote come from? I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Look at your cross references.
Hosea,
where?
6:6.
There's two places this comes from. Hosea 6:6 one is Micah 6 is the other. I want you to go back to Micah 6. This is a passage that is quoted quite a few times. I don't know the exact number, but quite a few times in the New Testament. Kirby, read for me, Micah.
I can't find out all of a sudden. I lost my way.
That's all right. Tess, are you there? Okay. Tess beat you, sorry. Tess, Micah 6, 6 through 8, please.
What shall I come to the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God.
Okay. What is Micah condemning Israel of?
Sacrifices.
Okay. Say what?
He wants obedience.
Yes. What were they giving sacrifices?
Yeah.
Yes. What were they not giving?
Obedience.
Yes. They weren't giving themselves. So this is one of those passages in Hosea 6 is the same. Micah 1 is another one. Malachi 1 is another one where Israel is doing the actions, but they're not giving themselves over to the Lord. They're not loving God, loving their neighbor. They're not doing justice. They're not doing righteousness. And God says, I don't care about your sacrifices. It's
just
like, meaningless.
Just like Adam, we go back to our past, like where it all started with Adam, to preserve and to expand this kingdom.
Yes.
God's not only land, but people. You know, and that's what David and Christ were doing when the priests, all they were doing, the priestly roles and the functions and the regulations, they weren't fulfilling and get to the heart of what it was.
Exactly, right? I mean, you look at Adam. Adam had two jobs. Keeping guard. He didn't do either of them. It seems there were many other things he did, but he didn't do those. Same with the priests, right? The priests, sure, they take animals and kill them and put them on a fire, but they don't actually fulfill the role of priest. Okay? Go ahead, Tiffany.
Another question.
Mm-hmm.
David is given some leniency on several different things that are meant to be priestly roles, as is Christ, even though he's non-Levite. Does it have anything to do with both of them being handpicked by God?
Possibly. And this goes back to what Eric said a second ago. Possibly, because they do take that priestly function, even though they weren't from the tribe of Levi.
You know, the vain worship, that's the same thing, right? Because, I mean, God hated that. You know, and the same thing about it's just being disobedient. It's vain.
Yes.
It's vain.
Yeah, Matthew 15, right? I mean, they have all of these regulations for hand washing, and yet they don't cleanse their heart. Jesus says, who cares? Who cares? Who cares? Other thoughts? Mark?
When Jesus says, in, was it Matthew 12?
Yeah.
One greater than the temple has come?
John 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know...
He does Matthew 12 as well. But okay. Yeah, sorry.
The function of the priests, it's regulation and it's pointing to something greater. They're doing this to obey, but what they're doing, whether or not they know it or not, is a foreshadow of Christ. And Christ is the reality.
Yes.
That was the shadow.
Yes.
The true tabernacle is Christ.
Yes.
So I think, I mean, that could be Jesus saying it's all pointing to me.
I think that's the key. Right? That's the key. Looking now at the true Sabbath. Looking at the true temple. Okay? Let me tell you all the other view of this. I'll tell you, I've talked to Ralph Walker about this passage. And Ralph and I have the same view. One year I think that Jesus is saying it's not lawful. The next year I think he's saying it was lawful. I think the key to understanding this passage is what Mark just said. Something greater than temple is here. Okay? Back up to verse 2. The Pharisees told him, look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. True or false? Short answer. Actually, false. False. That merely on the Sabbath you could glean grains. You could glean grains on the Sabbath. That was one of the exemptions given for Sabbath, right? The Pharisees, however, had made up all of these very specific. They had over 500 of them. They had these very specific little. They weren't even rules so much as just. I don't even know what to call them. But in their Mishnah, they had all of these ordinances that you could not do these small little things on Sabbath, right? You couldn't pull an ox out of a well is another one, okay? It seems to me they were not breaking the law of Moses and merely gleaning grain. You could eat on the Sabbath, okay? And if you didn't have food on the Sabbath, the law of Moses gave you a few different ways that you could still eat on the Sabbath, okay? So I think Jesus is saying, okay, first of all, look... You all look up to David as a hero. David is universally regarded as a hero to the Jews. Okay? Every time David is quoted in the New Testament, he is always a hero. Always. There is not one negative word about David anywhere in the New Testament. Even your great hero David went and took for the better presence on from the priest. Then likewise... your priest of the Pharisaical bunch, your priest had gone to the temple and defiled it. But here's the problem. You have missed the fact that neither David nor your priest served the actual temple. I'm the real temple. I'm going to bring to you of the true temple. And you now need to understand that it's not about the coming age is not about physical temple, physical Sabbath. It's about spiritual realization through the Messiah, spiritual Sabbath, spiritual temple. So I don't know if he's telling them here, look, David was justified in this so much as he's saying, look, y'all don't get onto David for this, but you're going to get onto my disciples for this. You're being hypocrites in your judgment here. Y'all need to stop being hypocrites and start looking at the greater thing that's about to come. Now, as I said, this is the passage that everything y'all have said also makes a lot of sense. But I don't know if he's saying two options. Y'all look up to David, but he broke it. Y'all get onto him, but you're getting onto my disciples. Or if he's saying, no, David was actually justified in this, so just stop your hypocrisy. Regardless, I think he's criticizing the Pharisees for their hypocrisy. All right, thoughts that y'all have about that? I know that's a lot. Angie, what's on your mind? Go ahead. No?
So 1 year you take the one view, and the next year you take the next.
Pretty much. So I'll teach this again in a year and change my mind. No, because seriously, I'm just like, and this is exactly what Ralph said. It's like, it's difficult to tell from the wording here whether or not Jesus is saying what David did was unlawful. No, the only people that were supposed to eat it were the priests, but David did take on a priestly function at times. So it could have been okay for him to do this.
The people that were with him as well?
Right, and there's the question. Mm-hmm. Here's the question.
That's one thing I would wonder about, is all the other times that David was seen doing these other priestly things.
Yeah.
Making sacrifices and wearing like the priestly garments while his wife is doing that. And there's several occasions where he really looks like a priest.
I know, Eric, and I still don't know what to do with all those. Yeah. Because it's like, yes, I understand that that is pointing us forward to the priest king. From that prophetic sense, I get it. But why did Zadok was a wonderful high priest. Why did Zadok allow that? I mean, if you look through the history of high priests, Zadok is the best of the best of the high priests. Why did Zadok allow that? And I don't know. Solomon does the same thing, right? So, go ahead, Kirk.
But we got to be so careful with that, right?
Yes.
Because then we can justify why I do something wrong. Well, you know.
Yes. And that's why this text is used at times to say, oh, here's a law, but here's another law that supersedes it. And that's why I have difficulty saying that it would be lawful for David to have done it. I think more or less what he's saying is, like Matthew 23:23, you tithe mint, dill, and cumin, you forget the weightier matters of the law. I think this is another type text. Is you think you keep all these physical parts of Sabbath, you forget true Sabbath. And so it's not an either or, but it's you do the small thing, you need to do the greater thing. And that seems to be what he's really enforcing them here, is get over your hypocrisy and do the greater thing.
So what do you think now?
I don't know.
Good answer.
I think it's intentional, doesn't it? Outright rebuke or outright allow or approve of the action. And I mean, if we take that everything that Christ said is purposeful and intentional, then there's a reason that he didn't
right. Take
a stance on it. And I think in this example specifically, he is talking about matters of heart and intent and lukewarmness over what the law dictates to right or wrong, like which side of the line you're on, the white or black.
Sure. And that's a great point, Ben, because, I mean, one chapter over in Matthew 13, why does he speak in parables? So that some will get it, some won't. And I think that's really the teaching of all of Jesus and Matthew. There's everything that he says you could look at and be like, yeah, I get it. But then from the other perspective, it's like, now Jesus really had something a whole lot deeper going on here.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Go ahead, Daniel, close us out.
I think it reeks of situational ethics.
You're taking us back to the 1960s.
Smells.
Yeah.
Don't get started. I just recently heard a preacher in a worksheet justify situation ethics on the handout. So it's still out there. It's important.
Yeah. So, I mean, as I said, y'all, this is one of those cases where it's just like, knowing the Old Testament context helps, but what do you do with it? Close out, Jeff.
But what's verse 5 talking about, the priest profaning the temple on Sabbath?
Yeah. Difficult to tell, Dale. That tell there. It seems he's talking about Malachi. Malachi, the priest, were condemned for doing that. So that seems to be the reference he's making. That was not specific, so it's hard to tell.
What's the blameless part then? What's the blameless part then?
What do you mean?
It's saying that, I mean, it says that he profaned it, that he was blameless. Right?
I think it just means that the Pharisees here didn't condemn them for that.
God didn't strike him dead.
Oh,
yeah.
He's just using that as
Sorry. Yeah, I had to get the verse there. Yeah. All right, thank you all for your thoughts tonight. All done.
Good.